I'd like to start this next section with some words from our beloved founder that are in this book. When I read them, it just kind of really spoke to me. I had long ago learned that eating plans and meetings are not my program of recovery. Although they are helpful and even necessary, AA's Big Book statement was more than ever true for me. Here are the steps which are suggested as a program of recovery. Since 1961, I've taken 24 fourth steps and hundreds of tenth steps. Today I continue to surrender, make amends, carry the OA message, and practice these principles in all my affairs. Beginning in 1962, I've had a period of prayer and meditation every morning before I start my day. It's become a habit, one which has stood me in good stead as I surrendered myself to my higher power each day and admitted my powerlessness over food. Since our recovery is spiritual, emotional, and physical, I'm careful to include a daily routine of exercise and walking. It took me 3 years to lose 40 pounds. That slow weight loss allowed my mind to become thin along with my body. On other diets, I had lost weight so fast that my head stayed fat while my figure slenderized. Because I pay attention to what goes into my mouth, I can pay attention to what goes into my heart and mind and soul. Today, I can enjoy a normal-sized body while maintaining a 60-pound weight loss from my top weight. Instead of being a struggle, life is really fun. I delight in spending time with my husband and with my daughters and their husbands. I can take pleasure in playing with my small grandsons and appreciate working in my beautiful rose garden. I care about others because I care about myself. Because I kept coming back, I learned the validity of an elementary spiritual principle given to me by the Reverend Rollo M. Boas, one of OA's earliest supporters. If you remove your body from the truth, when you are ready, the truth is nowhere to be found. But if you continue to bring your body to the truth, then when you are ready, the truth is waiting there for you. And that truth, our promise of recovery, is in every OA meeting when we join hands, pray together, and joyously, lovingly encourage one another, keep coming back. A word from our sponsor, our founder, a word from our founder. This last part, and she was talking about some of the actions she was taking for her recovery and some of the things we've kind of sort of been talking about, that our meetings and our plan of meeting, they're part of our program, but they're not our program. The program is in the 12 steps, and the 12 steps to me are focused, they end up at step 12. And to me, step 12 is, what is the goal of recovery? The goal is living out step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry the message and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And so service. Again with the big book. Working with others. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. One of my favorite Bill W. stories was when he was talking to his wife, Lois, and he says, I have been working with these alcoholics for 6 months, and nobody has gotten sober. I have tried and tried with alcoholic after alcoholic after alcoholic, and nobody is sober. And Lois said, Bill, I know one alcoholic who's sober. And I need to remember that when I'm sponsoring, that I share, my job as a sponsor is to share what I've done and not to fix anybody. And if the people I sponsor want to do what I suggest, I think it'll work for them like it worked for me. But if they don't, and it's not my job to fix them. It's my job to share what God has done for me. And in sharing what God has done for me, I am benefited more than they are. Because the more I say it, the more cemented it is in here. And I can't tell you how many times someone I sponsor has called me. Well, see, I told my sponsor with something. And she tells me, we talk. And then within 5 minutes, I'll get a phone call with someone I'm sponsoring doing the same stuff. And so I get to talk about it before I'm even practicing it. You know, you get to pass it on. And then somebody else will call the same day, and I get to talk about it before I even sort of... the thing is God gives me the chance to say what I need to hear over and over and over again. I'm a real good forgetter. But when I can say it over and over and over, it sets up in here. And I've also learned that I don't know. I forgot what I learned. So having had a spiritual awakening, that's what the program is all about. It's the spiritual awakening. And I shared before that while the weight stuff and the food stuff is really nice, it's a side effect of recovery, not the goal. No, there's a lot of side effects, you know. I work my program, I work the steps, and the goal is this spiritual awakening, and the side effect is I get to have this normal size, healthy body, and I get to pass as normal. Now, what does the food plan, what does the plan of eating do for me? It helps me pass as a normal eater. I may not be, but in group settings, I look like one. Nobody knows. I went for the longest time in Alaska. I had a meeting by myself. You know, it was a big book study. I would go to the Alano Club every Wednesday at noon, and I would read my big book for an hour and then go home. And it was supposed to be a meeting, but I was the only one showing up. And one day, one of the guys who took care of the Alano Club walked in and said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, it's an OA meeting." And he said, "OA?" And I said, "Yeah, Overeaters Anonymous." And he looked at me and he says, "Well, you don't look like an overeater." And I said, "And you, sir, do not look like a drunk." And he said, "Point taken." But I get to share that I may not look like a compulsive overeater, but I still, I am a compulsive overeater. I am in recovery. It's like being diabetic. I am a diabetic. I was on meds at one time when I was 250 pounds. I am no longer on meds, but my doc, I am what's called food controlled or diet controlled. My doc says that if I ever stop doing what I'm doing, my sugars will go back up. I am not cured of my diabetes, but I'm taking the actions to keep it in remission, sort of. I am still a compulsive overeater. And no matter how long I'm abstinent, I will always be a compulsive overeater. But you can't tell by looking at me, just like you can't tell by taking my blood right now that I'm a diabetic. You just can't tell. But it's still there. But how does this spirit, the going into practicing the spiritual principles in all my affairs, and how does that keep me in recovery? And going back to, it's the things that hurt that lead me into eating. It's this whole relationship thing. I heard someone also say once that all roads lead to Al-Anon. It's all about relationship. It's all about living in relationship. And the things in my life that hurt me are because I have to live in relationship with people who don't agree with me and co-sign everything I say and do. The silly people. So the things that cause me the pain in my life are because I have to live in relationship with this world. And I have to deal with all these things in my world that I don't agree with and approve of and like. And so practicing the spiritual principles. And what does that do? Well, when I don't know what to do, and when I say I don't know what to do, most of the time that means that what I want to do, what I want to do is yell, scream, rant, cry. You know, that's what I want to do. And I don't know what to do because I don't want to do the option. And but what practicing the principles, it gives me a guide for what the action to take, practicing the principles does not mean I feel the principles. Practicing tolerance does not mean I feel tolerant. It means I act as if I'm tolerant. Practicing loving kindness does not mean I'm feeling loving and kind. It just means I'm practicing it. The more I practice makes progress. The more I practice acting tolerant when I don't feel tolerant, the more tolerant I can become. The more I practice being loving when I don't feel loving, the more loving I can become. The more I practice honesty when I don't feel like being honest, or I'm afraid of being honest, the more honest I can become. So when I want to do something, if I can step back and go through the list of every spiritual principle I can think of, and there are a lot more than are in the ones that go with the steps are just a few. Acceptance. Is it accepting? Is it loving? Is it kind? Is it tolerant? Is it patient? Is it honest? And go through all the ones that come to mind. And if I can say no to even one spiritual principle, it is not God's will for me to do that thing. I have to say yes to every spiritual principle. And when I can do that, I know that's the action to take. I have never regretted practicing a spiritual principle. I've never regretted being kind to my sweetheart when I really wanted to be ticked off at him. That doesn't mean I don't get ticked off once in a while, but I've never regretted treating people with kindness. You know, I've never regretted returning kindness for unkindness. I've never regretted returning compassion for lack of compassion. I've never regretted these things. And so practicing these principles, for one thing, it makes me more of service to God and others. I don't have as much pain inside of me. Because it's this whole backwards thing. It's the pain that leads me to compulsive eating. And all of these steps just walk me through how I can let go of the character defects that cause the pain and get rid of all the stuff around it that have caused me guilt so that I no longer need or want to eat compulsively. It all comes back to, I live my whole life on a diet, feeling like if I could just lose the weight, I would feel good inside myself. And realizing that it really is probably almost the opposite, that God works on my insides, and he transforms my insides through the spiritual awakening, through practicing the spiritual principles, through service, so that I'm at peace inside of me. So I don't have to, I'm not using food to make me feel okay. I'm not using starving to make me feel okay. I'm not using, I was a compulsive yeller before I came into program, my poor children, because I didn't know how to deal with them. And so because I didn't know how to deal with them, I would scream at them so they would leave me alone. I don't have to do that anymore. I don't have to be afraid. I was so afraid that my husband regretted marrying me and that if he knew what I was like, he would just leave me. It's been this really amazing revelation that actually the truth is he feels he wants to be joined at the hip. It's like, all these years, I thought he couldn't stand me, when really he's very clingy. Oh, you know, but to be open to, I have to feel like I'm a person who is worth, that my love is worth something. I have to feel that inside of me before I can really be a loving person. I have to feel it in here for myself before I can give it. I have to, the program talks about being of maximum service, and I have to be practicing the program before I can know what maximum service means. Maximum service does not mean doing for people what they really ought to be doing for themselves. Maximum service means saying, no, you know, you do that. Because it's like with my children. If I'd gone in and made their beds for them every morning, that would not have been a kind and loving thing for me to do. What the kind and loving thing to do is, don't leave the house until your bed's made. They may not see it as loving, but they all know how to make their beds, and they all know how to wash dishes, and they all know how to cook, and they all know how to do laundry, because I was a stinky mother and made them do it. You know, and so that was the service. And for so long, I thought that service meant doing for people and overdoing, and that service meant, service meant, I know what's best for you, therefore I will get you to do what I think you should do, and therefore we will all be happy. You know, that's not service. But practicing the spiritual, and that kind of thinking, because people never, you know, I had a husband script for my husband that he wouldn't follow. And I had a children script for my children that they wouldn't follow. And because they weren't following it, I was miserable. Because I'm just trying to help. But practicing the spiritual principles helps me let go and just be kind. Another nursing school thing. Helpful is in the eyes of the person being helped. You know. If I'm trying to help somebody do what I think they need to be doing, I'm helping me, I'm not helping them. Except when children making their beds. And that then all bets are off. But so it's, you know, service, giving away service. I love giving away service. I felt like I was incompetent and stupid and couldn't do anything right. That's the person I was coming into OA. But I was pulled along into service that I wouldn't have done otherwise, probably. I became intergroup chair when I didn't know how to do it, but people were very nice. I loved being intergroup chair, by the way. I thought that was just so fun. But still, there was this realization sometimes that if I binged, I would have to let go of it. And I could no longer do that anymore. And that's another level where service helped me stay abstinent. It was just that one other thing. These things you love to do, you're not going to be able to do if you can't stay abstinent. For me, food is the last thing to go. And I don't want to know the last thing to go. I want to know the first thing to go. The first thing to go for me is my spiritual life. It's working the steps backwards. You know, I stopped doing step 12. I stopped giving service. I stopped practicing spiritual principles. That's the first thing to go. Then the next, you know, I stopped doing my prayer and meditation. That's the next thing to go. I stopped doing my 10 steps. That's the next thing to go. And, you know, then I start feeling bad, and so I'm emotionally messed up. And so I'm not doing my 8 and 9, and I'm not doing my 6 and 7, and I'm not doing my 3 and 4. And then I get back to not doing, you know, 4 and 5. 3, I get to 3, and that's kind of where the food starts coming in, or before. But the food is the last thing to go. My spirituality goes first, my emotions go second, and my food comes along for the ride at the tail end of it. I want to be aware of the first thing to go. I want to stay as far from compulsive eating as I can. You know, the ditch, when I'm spiritually fit, it's narrow. when I'm not spiritually fit, it's wide. I can't jump it. Well, I can't ever. Okay, but where am I? But recovery, real abstinence, is abstaining from self-will for me. When I look at what my personal definition of abstinence is, it's abstaining from I want what I want when I want it. And that's for food, that's for people, that's for life, when I abstain from that, then I can be at peace. I shared that life got really hairy there for a few years. One of the things I learned is that most of the stuff that I was stressing out over wasn't my stuff. My daughter who married the guy in prison, and he got out of prison and he moved in with her and he started beating her, and then he burned her house down, and that wasn't my stuff. That was her stuff. Now, the fact that she and her son moved in with us, that was partly my stuff. That's where I had to work my program. But also letting go of her stuff and realizing she had to deal with her life. But practicing the spiritual principles, what's my business, what's her business, so that I can be at peace in God's world. I don't have to fix normal. There's some feelings that are normal. When my daughter died, grief was normal. I don't have to fix it. It's important that I feel it and not run from it. I discovered when Jim died that I could be, this doesn't make sense, I could be happy in the middle of grieving. Because they're not the same. And it was really this interesting feeling to realize that I was grieving and I was crying a lot, but underneath it all, there was a happiness. There was maybe a peace is a better word for it, but I was okay. And I had a higher power who was getting me through it. And I can say, this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened. And there were times I resented breathing because every breath was another minute I had to be in pain. And then this happened, and this happened, and this happened. But I stayed abstinent. And a lot of that is service, because one of the first things that God told me after Jen died was that the way to walk through it was to focus on giving service. And I don't know the quality of my service at that time. I think a lot of it was pretty poor, maybe, because I was not doing especially well, but I was trying to give service. I was putting forth that effort. I was getting out of myself. I was focusing on other people. And that got me through. It got me through abstinently. And other people could deal with whether or not it was wonderful service or not, but the giving service part kept me in recovery through some of the most difficult times I could imagine. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the difficult times in my life, because I think that I tend to forget God when things are going smooth. I think that when I practice the principles of recovery in difficult times, they get cemented in more firmly. So I'm grateful for all this stuff I went through. I'm grateful for the knowledge that I don't think the life can throw anything at me that's strong enough to make me leave my program. If ever I should leave, it won't be because God's not able to handle it. I know that God wants me to be abstinent. It's like I come to abstinence and recovery, and it's like this waterfall, like a huge waterfall. And I come with a teaspoon. And I say, this is enough. The more I practice program, then I get to come with a cup. this is enough. And then I come with a bucket. But the amount of recovery I have isn't so much God doing it. It's my willingness to embrace it. As I shared before, I had to develop a capacity to be willing to be happy. And I had to develop a capacity to be willing to have joy. And that really is all centered in and self-esteem. That's another thing. Someone asked me how I worked on my low self-esteem problem, and I didn't. I worked on giving service. And if God has put me in a position to give service, then God must esteem me pretty well. You know, it's God esteem. God thinks this much of me. Also, realizing that low self-esteem is pride. You know, I want to be EST. If I'm not the prettiest, then I'm the ugliest. If I'm not the smartest, then I'm the dumbest. If you know, so whatever it is, I want to be the mostest. The most awful place in the world is just being another bozo on the bus. You know, but to realize that God esteems me enough to use me is another part of my abstinence and my recovery and my program, just to know that, and that all came, you know, all came through service. It came through service that God is able to use me, even if I originally thought I couldn't do it. A good friend of mine in program says that God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called. And I have learned that in my OA service, because I came into program feeling like I was worse than pond scum, because you could use pond scum for fertilizer. And I thought there was no hope for me. But it was through giving away service that I was able to see that there, you know, God's a great recycler. And he took the mess of a person who didn't think she was worth anything and turned her into somebody that maybe has something, you know. If God can take the person I was and make me who I am today, God can do anything for anybody. And I'm very grateful for my recovery today, and thank you for allowing me to be here and to share what God has done for me with you. And thank you very much.
And we thank you.
We have a little gift for Vicki. And